Hello.
Oh, it didn't even ring that time. That was weird.
That rung for me.
No, nothing here. Anyway, it's live now.
Yay.
Yay. It's
Yay.
exciting.
I'm excited, aren't you excited?
I think I'm asleep. I'm not sure, but I might be asleep right
Don't think you're asleep
now.
because you're talk yawning. Yawking. Yawn yawking?
Oh, Dropbox says I'm all, my head hard drive is almost full. Hi,
Oh,
Dropbox.
that's bad. You should probably pause your Dropbox so it doesn't keep downloading things.
I push this button and I have 60 GB free.
Oh, that's
Good.
fantastic.
It's not bad, honestly.
Yeah, could be worse. Could be 60 gigabytes, not free.
I did fill up my work computer hard drive while I was working, and I got the message at like 2 in the morning, and I was like, "Oh, this is perfect timing."
Was something you could work on to fix because you were awake.
Yeah, I had what was it, like 7 gigs free or something, but it has a very small internal SSD because it was a Fusion drive, and I split it, and it's very, very slow. Fusion drive is very bad. I finally
Yeah.
ran some speed tests on those drives, and my USB-C external G-RAID is much faster than the internal spinning disk.
Hard to believe.
Yeah,
But
Fusion drive bad.
yeah. Yes, Dan, I get it. I'm in no danger of buying one anytime soon.
Just making sure. Go ahead, caller. You had a point.
Well, I was just gonna let the listeners know that we finished our run of the first six Mission Impossible movies, and that was a way to spend time. And initially it sounded like a good idea because we could talk about a movie without having to pick one every week, because we would know immediately what was next. And then the movies got a lot longer towards the end, so it became a little more of a logistical management issue, as our time was not so great for the both of us to record. But now that we're on Mission Impossible 7, Phantom Agenda, we have plenty of time to talk about this one. It's 3 hours, and we can get started now.
No.
It's easy, Dan. There's a traitor in the agency. Tom
All
Cruise
right,
and his
of
team
course.
can't trust anyone.
It's probably some airplanes, definitely some running.
Oh,
I
car
bet you
chase for sure.
people wear some suits. Yeah, there's probably some masks, maybe some motorcycles.
Yeah, well, with the car chase, the audio is going to cut out for part of it, and you're just hearing engine noises. But then once they're through a certain part, once they hit to a certain end point, then the music comes back in, the score comes back in.
It's very brave.
Yeah. Anyway.
I like the Mission Impossible movies. You're right, they did get a little bit long though.
Yeah, and a
At this
little
point though,
formulaic.
well, the formula is do a bunch of cool stuff that people enjoy seeing. It's spectacle. It was probably it's marvelization a little bit, you know.
Yeah, I wonder what Martin Scorsese thinks of the Mission Impossible movies. I don't
No, I
actually.
think
I don't want to know. No one ask him.
I think you don't listen to podcasts, do you?
No, I've never heard of a podcast. What is it?
No. The past couple weeks was like the Ed Norton world tour of various podcasts because he had a movie coming out, so he talks to literally everyone. And I thought he had some very interesting things to say about both himself and his career. But he there was, I don't even remember which show it was at this point, but he did sort of talk to one of the folks about sort of the whole Marvelization thing of cinema. Not directly going like Martin Scorsese and going, "Meh, everything's bad," but they had some interesting conversations about that kind of stuff. It was probably. I don't think it was the Marc Maron one. Well, maybe it was the Marc Maron. It probably wasn't the Alec Baldwin one. Who knows? He also talked to Hardwick, which was,
Yeah.
the first 30 minutes of the Hardwick interview was him just sort of doing his marketing speak because he had no idea what the hell he was doing talking to Chris Hardwick.
I don't know what he was doing talking to Chris Hardwick either. I would personally not do that myself, but I'm not.
It became more interesting later, but I started with the Marc Maron one because that one came out first. That was pretty good. The Alec Baldwin was also very good, but I like Ed Norton. It was interesting to hear from him and hear him talk about things.
He seems challenging.
He does, but when you listen to him here, he seems like just an incredibly reasonable human being who just takes his job seriously, as you would really kind of want an actor to do. So it was interesting to see that perspective, especially, you know, you got a cumulative like 3.5 hours of him talking. You kind of get a better sense of what kind of person he is.
Okay. And Dan will add all these podcasts that he can't remember to the show notes. So look for those.
Yeah, I'm not going
to
do any of that. these little known podcasts like WTF and Here's the Thing. And I'm going to call it Nerdist because ID10T is a stupid ass name.
Chris Hardwick has been canceled, so I don't need to listen to his podcast. Also, I didn't like his podcast beforehand, so I wasn't listening. So it made it really easy for me to cancel him.
You know, the best part of his podcast was not him; it was the other people, which is, you know, he gets a little bit of the Marc Maron thing for me, where I fast forward through all of the things where he's talking directly to the audience before and after the show because I don't need any of that.
Man. That is a format that I'm glad we don't have because we have a natural rapport where we start up the conversation and go, you know, something about the connection with Skype and like, can you?
Hey, audience, what you're about to hear today is a very special episode.
Oh, God.
Before we do that, let's talk about some of the things that we had going on our Facebook group before we get into the episode. There was some very interesting. What do we have to say to people?
Nothing. Nothing.
Don't break the fourth wall. Wait, that's
why are they even listening to us right now?
It's like a radio show before the show. People don't listen to this. I'm pretty sure they don't.
No. I'm sure everybody just hit delete when this popped up in their queue, and they probably don't even know why they subscribe to it at this point. They just have a ritual where every week they delete a podcast.
You know, there are so many rituals in my life that I wonder why they need to be there.
Well, you know, it's important to have rituals because the routine keeps you sane. You know, you're not guessing things. You can just kind of do a couple of stuff on autopilot. It gives you some certainty in your life.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have any of those rituals that you would care to share with the audience that people might think are a little odd?
Struggling to think of any.
The main rituals that I think of when I think of like sort of bookending my day is I make my AeroPress coffee, which is, you know, tedious and slow, but it's what I do in the morning. And at night, I have the ritual of filling up the humidifier and flipping the little filter guy and making sure that that's on because A, I like the white noise, and B, I think it does actually help us sleep a little better in this very, very dry climate here.
Yeah, it's important to monitor your humidities. No, I can't think of.
By the way, you cited your ThermPro's humidities on the recent Unsug, and I'm quite certain that my ThermPro is inaccurate. It says the humidity is much higher than it is because I trust the Ecobee because it was more expensive, and it says it's like half as humid in here as the ThermPro says.
Okay,
I'm just saying.
That's fine.
The ThermPro is generous with its moisture.
Okay. Well, I'm glad somebody is. But I don't super duper care to invest in an array of hygrometers to see what is the most accurate, what feels like the most accurate form of my humidity monitoring. But yeah, it's fine for what it does. But it's been dry here. It's not as dry at the moment. Our red flag warning is no longer in effect. We are not in grave risk of anything bad happening. And in the morning, for a couple of days, it was actually kind of misty with a little bit of a marine layer. Not the clothing brand, the actual meteorological phenomenon. Yeah.
You mentioned that one time to me, and I didn't know what it was, and then I Googled it, and now I'm still getting Instagram ads for it.
Oh, marine layer?
Yeah.
The clothing?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Not the
it was just like,
phenomenon.
Wow. It was like Carl the Fog's cousin. But, yeah, it's a...
No.
Yeah, no, I like a couple of things there. They're not.
It's an old brand, I think, is something I didn't know prior to the Instagram ads. Is that correct? It's been around for a long time.
I mean, define old.
The '80s.
Okay.
Because I think the ads were something like, you know, your favorite sweatshirt from your childhood or something, or is back or something. I was like, I don't know who you are. What are you doing? What are you doing on my feed?
How did you get in here? No, I,
how did you get this number?
I don't really have any idea. I'm sure somebody could Google that if they wanted. But no. Anyway, it's fine. The weather's fine. It could be better. But it's not worse, so that's better than it being worse. And I'm looking forward to potentially the end of December. Maybe it'll rain, which would be interesting. So
it warmed back up here. It was very cold for a couple of days, including Halloween, and then now it's warm again.
Yeah, we had a couple of days where it was like 60s during the day, and I like that. It's kind of refreshing to wear jeans without like feeling incredibly overheated. So that was good. We're almost to that season.
First of all, don't wear shorts.
You're not the boss of me. I'm gonna wear shorts because it's hot.
I am your boss. I am no one's
careful
father, papa, or daddy, no. But I am your boss.
Okay.
I wear
starring
pants.
Alec Baldwin.
That sounds like more like a Stephen Baldwin.
Yeah.
Episode. I wear pants, but I cuff them up and show my ankles to everyone because I'm one of those guys.
I don't like the cuff.
Gotta keep the ankles cool. I don't like the recent pants that I bought because I have to do 3 cuffs for them to be appropriate and in height, and then they get a little bunchy because 3 is too many. I prefer a pant of the appropriate length where 2 cuffs does the job. But no.
How did you happen to buy these incredibly long pants?
Oh, because they're from H&M, where everyone is apparently 5 inches wide. So when you buy pants for someone of my size, they assume that I'm 7 feet tall.
Wait. Are we talking about pants that don't have an inseam measurement on them? Are we talking about sweatpants that just come in large
and extra large? They are pants.
Are they big boy pants, or are they ones that just have a letter?
They are big boy pants. They have a waist measurement, but they don't have an inseam. Like, you can't get them with various inseams. They're like, here's your inseam. It's this.
Doesn't sound like they're big boy pants, Dan. Well, I mean, clearly they are big boy pants because you have to cuff them. retract my statement.
It's H&M. They're not making a variety of types of pants. They're like, here, this is what we got for you.
Mm. I'm not a huge fan of their stuff.
Well, these ones are very comfortable, aside from the being, you know, 4 inches too long or whatever it is.
Mm. I did buy a blazer there one time. I needed a navy blue blazer, and it was difficult to find an appropriate blue, and also a fit in like a ready to wear kind
gold
of situation.
Buttons?
Not gold, because this isn't the 1980s. But
sorry, brass.
Yeah, no, it's just, I think they were either black or dark blue. I don't remember. I don't have the blazer in front of me. Hard to believe. It was nice. The fabric was Italian, and then apparently it was made in Romania, which was interesting. But yes, it was a okay blazer. I tend to not shop there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Same.
But now that we've covered the weather,
clothing.
Did you eat anything today? Do you want to talk about food?
we made some lovely food for late breakfast. I mean, I have the day off, so I slept in and did nothing for most of the day, and then sent some emails.
Yeah, but you've been working your butt off, so it's fine that you slept in. But
I'm still very tired. I slept for a regular amount of time last night, but I'm still very tired. I don't know how I managed to stay up till 2 a.m. last night because, well, it's my body is just on that routine. I've been going to bed at 4 a.m. for the past couple of days.
Well, hopefully you'll be able to get back into the regular rhythm of things.
Yeah, where I just go to bed at midnight or 1 a.m.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, normal stuff.
Normal. Deeply broken human being.
So you didn't eat anything interesting?
Did I eat anything?
That was my question, and then you pivoted to sleep somehow.
Well, I mean, I can't be like, oh, I went to a fancy place and did some things. Like, you know, we made some avocado toast and some eggs and veggies and stuff, and then I had a, you know, buffalo chicken sandwich later.
Ah, see, that's what I want to criticize you about. So the buffalo chicken sandwich.
it's my usual food item at the place we go to on the day of the week that it is when we're recording this.
Ah, but I thought that you got the boneless wings like a large adult child.
Occasionally I get the boneless wings, but the sandwich is basically boneless wings without being cut up on a sandwich. It's just a big chicken patty dipped in buffalo sauce with some cheese on it, and then some lettuce and onions, and it's good.
Blue cheese?
No. It's like melted provolone on top of it for some reason. It's very strange, but it's good.
Okay. Well, I just was curious because blue cheese is not great for most sandwiches unless there's like other condiments to kind of melt it into.
And then you take the buffalo chicken sandwich and you dunk it in some ranch. No. It's basically a hot wing on a bun.
You're just having an enormous chicken tender with two pieces of bread.
A gigantic chicken tender slathered in like Frank's Red Hot style buffalo sauce. And then on a bun that has so much sugar in it, it may as well be a donut.
Oh, is this one of those fake brioche buns?
It's very pale white, but it is kind of brioche-ish, and it's super duper sweet. It's basically like a plus size King's Hawaiian roll or something. I don't know what the hell it is.
Hmm. Well, King's Hawaiian does make a hamburger bun.
Do they really? I mean, this is slightly larger than your canonical hamburger bun that they use for the sandwich. But I don't know. Maybe it's a King's Hawaiian brand product. Are the hamburger buns also square shaped?
No, I believe they're round.
Hmm. This one's kind of squarish.
Okay. Well, I don't know. I don't know what you ate, Dan.
I don't know what I ate too. It was bread. It was bread and chicken and onions. I like onions. I do enjoy the raw onions. And every time I eat raw onions, I think of you saying how much you hate raw onions.
I hate raw onions.
I like the crunch and the bitterness of it.
No. Gross. Yuck. Ew. Ew. were these raw red or raw white?
You know, it's very strange. I get their, you know, it's a sports bar, so you can literally imagine what their shitty little side salad looks like. And that has diced red raw onion on it, and I enjoy that. But the sandwich has white raw onion on it for some reason.
Hmm.
I prefer the red. If I'm being honest here. You don't prefer the red, you prefer the white?
Oh, I prefer neither. But if I had to pick between the two, if someone was going to pay me $100 if I ate a piece of raw onion, I would pick the white.
$100? $100 is what it would take for you to eat a red raw onion.
No, he was just picking a number out of the air, Dan. I would do it for $1.
I would give you $1. Wait, how much of the onion are we talking about?
Well,
we're talking about a single, like, circular onion ring style circle, or like a tiny little, like a 1x1 dice.
If you were to use the traditional, like, we have cut through the onion so that you have a ring shape that would go on top of a burger or other large sandwich, then that ring shape, I would eat that for $1.
Okay.
But not the whole concentric slice, though, not a slice of onion.
Right. Now, people who put a whole slice on their burger that's 7 inches tall, they're just assholes. Like, that's not helping anyone.
I want to let you know something, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to edit out any of the curse words in this one. We're just going to let it fly. Okay.
That's fine. This episode is marked E for explicit or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Check the box. But
yeah. No, we'll record a thing at the end like they do for other podcasts, and we'll put it in the front and say, the following podcast contains explicit language.
And adult content.
Yeah, exactly.
Namely pants. But, so...
Pants.
That wasn't such a weird sandwich, all things told.
No. Did you have something weird?
Well, we had the catered thing at work, and I want to reserve my comments about that, since it's not my money. I'm grateful that I had food. And
you're grateful that the employer that is requiring you to stay at work past dinner is providing you with food.
I would like it to sound more grateful than that, Dan. but anyway, yeah. And then,
I mean, how can you not be grateful? They don't even beat you while you're working your overtime.
But anyway, I went to Gelson's for lunch. And I had a pre-made sandwich thingy there.
What's a Gelson's?
It's a supermarket.
I was going to say it was a deli.
No, they have a deli section, but it's not a deli.
Oh, sure. I mean, most grocery stores have a deli section.
It's nicer than Ralph's or Pavilion's, but not as nice as Bristol Farms.
Mm. I know you are a big Bristol fan.
Yeah, yeah. The Gelson's is nearish to work. There is also a Ralph's that's very close to work, but I would rather not go there. It's one of the bad Ralph's. There are always good Ralph's and bad Ralph's. And
do you frequently purchase sandwiches at grocery stores?
Why not? They have all of the ingredients of a sandwich at the grocery store.
Sure. I mean, the grocery store is typically where one would purchase the things to make things at home, not just like go to the deli counter and buy a sandwich like it's a restaurant or something.
Yeah, but I have done that. Okay. Well, yeah, if they have a nice deli counter, I will approach the deli counter. The Gelson's, it usually takes quite a bit of time to turn around a sandwich order, especially if you get this one guy who's incredibly slow.
You're cool with hitting a deli counter at a grocery store and ordering a sandwich for lunch.
Yes, Dan. The deli meats I would put inside of a sandwich come from the deli counter.
Yeah, I know.
The tomato and the lettuce come from the grocery store. The bread, it also,
I'm familiar.
Spoiler alert, comes from the grocery store. They're just putting it together for you.
Right. Sure.
Mm-hmm. What I won't do is the poke bar that they added now that they did the renovation.
They put a poke bar. We've got an olive bar, but you've got a poke bar.
Yeah, well, there's an olive. Well, it's not a part of the salad bar has an olive bar component, but off to the side where the olive bar used to be prior to the renovation is now a poke bar, where they have several of those long trays full of marinating fish bits and vegetable things. And it would maybe seem more appealing had it not looked like it was a little used by customers.
So that's unappealing to me. If the poke bar was on the other side of the deli counter and you could have the grocery store employee make it for you,
More comfortable. 100%. Because when we go to Hawaii, there's a grocery store chain there called Funland, and they have a poke in a deli counter situation where you go up and you see the clear case and you say, I want, you know, give me the medium tub of that. And then they put that into the tub for you, and you get over rice, or you get the rice on the side or whatever. And then you get your chopsticks and you go sit down and you eat some poke. And it's good. It's not bad poke. Funland poke endorsed. But Gelson's, the fact that it's something that consumers touch with their grubby little fingers, I don't really want to have that raw fish, if you know what I mean. Also, they have rice from rice cookers that you scoop yourself. So there's Fuzzy Logic rice cookers, the big ones. Like if you go to a Panda Express, you know, the big rice cookers that they have? The huge
ones?
I'm
going to say yes. I haven't been in a Panda Express in like 15 years.
Okay. Well, close your eyes and imagine a large cylinder. And inside the large cylinder is rice. So they have two of those. And there's a little sign that says the little spoon paddle thing is inside of the rice cooker.
Please take one.
Yeah. So can you imagine someone taking their hand, holding this spoon thing for the rice to put into their container, then putting their hand back in there in a warm, humid environment for it to just sit with the rest of the rice? And then imagine...
Oh, because the spoon stays in the rice?
Yeah, the spoon stays in the rice. And the hot, humid container to keep the rice warm not dry. That also is a perfect breeding ground for all that stuff that was on somebody's hand, which has just been introduced into it.
It's an incubation chamber for rice petal germs.
Yeah, I really don't want to have it. So anyway, every time I see that PokeStation, I cringe because it just seems like a logistical error that they could have easily avoided had they just put it in the deli counter area.
Yeah, that sounds, we've got like a soup bar too, but I think sounds like the worst decision of all of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I don't trust the soup things either. Cause people, you know, the ladle thing, everybody's like grabbing that all over the place in places they shouldn't touch it. And I also don't trust salad bars because I see what people do with those tongs. They just chuck the whole thing in there, sitting in the tray on top of the food. And then the next person comes by, grabs the tong out of there, touching all the food. And then you just go back to stirring that all up. And then the employee comes by to refill the thing and they dump the dregs of the last thing on top of the other thing. And you're just perpetuating.
Oh, of course. That's always.
Yeah. No, thank you.
No. I love when they pour the thing on top of the other thing and you can see that it's like clearly a different color because it's just been like scalding for 10 hours. It's very gross.
Yeah. I saw them do that at Chipotle one time with the sofritas.
No. You don't want to do that.
No. That's why they also have there's like a certain bacterial outbreak that they've had at a couple of Chipotles, not the E. coli stuff, but there's apparently a bacteria which breeds very well inside of warming trays. So you know what Chipotle is, nothing but warming trays. So it works pretty well there because
they
just keep
it fresh every morning. I've seen the TV commercials.
Oh man, you ever go in there when they're grilling up a bunch of like chicken thighs all at the same time or the steak, and that it just is that sort of weird smell of searing meat along with the unpleasant sight of the sort of like pallid lump of stuff just sitting on top of the grill that hasn't really like cooked that much yet, and you're just like, ugh.
Yeah, the chicken is very yellow with whatever the marinade stuff they like half spread on it.
Oh, the chicken at the Chipotle that I have gone, Chipotle's that I have been to, always just seems sort of like raw-ish. It doesn't really seem like super marinated.
No, I don't think they actually marinate. I think they just like brush some stuff on before they cook it. It's very yellow looking and displeasing. I haven't had a meat or sofritas anything from Chipotle in probably a couple of years. I just did veggie burritos.
But that's just onions and green pepper.
No, I mean, I don't, not even the fajita veggies. I just do like rice and beans and all of the other stuff.
Oh.
Occasionally I'll throw in the fajita veggies, but they're always burnt and stringy and hard to chew through.
I really like when they're burnt and raw at the same time.
Yes, and very thick too. So
yeah,
because you take a bite of one and the whole thing comes out while you try to eat it.
Well, they also somehow managed to cut them up into these like isosceles triangles where there's a skinny, tiny little thread of a tip of onion on one side, and that has charred and burned to nothingness. And then the big fat end of that is completely raw. And it's just like, how did that happen? Guys, come on. Knife cuts.
It's a very professional operation they got over there. They don't have a Firebirds burritos near you?
No. The only time I've seen... Well, no. Actually, there's two that I've seen. One that's down in Torrance by the Total Wine, and then one that's on Lincoln and Washington, I think.
yep. Big yeah. Dr. Cousin worked at the one in Lincoln and Washington when he was doing his master's over at LMU.
Yeah. Well, needless to say, neither of these are in your work, and I have not been to one.
Mm. It's a Chipotle, but they have more options. You get like a spinach tortilla or a red pepper tortilla, and still Chipotle.
That's not really my main criticism of Chipotle.
No, but I mean, I think they are rolled at a more reasonable width, and I do remember enjoying the couple of experiences we had at the Firebirds near where we lived in San Jose.
That was a weird way of phrasing that. What were the experiences, if not the food?
Eating the food in the place. I don't know. I mean,
it's just the way you said experiences these days.
I enjoyed the going to the place and the ordering and talking to the young hip people who are. It's also one of those places where I think people are encouraged to wear funny hats so that they, you know, it's like the cool hip place, not the the Chipotle people who are very corporate. So yeah, it was, you know, it's nice outside of the box. It was like the Hot Topic of burritos.
Man, it's been a long time since I've had a good burrito. Well, I've had good breakfast burritos, but it's been a long time since I've had a good regular burrito. Burrito.
Really? Interesting. Mm-hmm. Do you not eat a lot of Mexican food?
I mean, not really, because it's mainly about convenience. Things that are near work is what I'm mainly eating these days, Dan.
Well, you know, have somebody Grubhub a burrito to you.
No, that's not worth doing that.
No, let me spoil that for you. No food delivery service is worth it unless you're tired and lazy. And the Mexican food that the gentleman brought to our house yesterday, it was not worth $55, but I was very tired and I didn't want to get off my couch, so he brought he brought us some food.
Wow. Okay.
It was incredibly lukewarm and very average, and they brought it to my house, so I didn't have to go anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, congratulations.
It's literally the selling point. Bring the food to me.
Oh, it was sold for $55.
Yep. Anyway, Mexican food is good. You should eat a lot more of it.
Thank you. I had no idea.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome. Mm-hmm. I had a green chili pork burrito while I was editing a couple of days ago. I don't remember if it was really, really good or if I was just really, really hungry, but I enjoyed it a lot.
Well, congratulations, Dan.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
No, I want a burrito, but I don't have one. Maybe I'll go get the breakfast burrito one tomorrow morning.
I don't know. Maybe it's me, but I feel like a breakfast burrito is almost kind of a pass-fail kind of thing. Like, there's not a ton of subtlety in breakfast burritos.
I disagree. There's different components sometimes, and the execution of those components, I feel, weighs heavily on it, as well as the
sure,
ratios.
But the major component is egg, mostly, and, you know, that's kind of filler at a certain point.
I would say the ratio sometimes skews a little more potato than egg.
See, I think people don't default to potato in breakfast burritos around here. I think you have to specially request potato in your breakfast burrito.
I think most places out here do potato in the breakfast burritos. And it tends to be hash browns or one place has tater tots, which is interesting.
Most of them here are like country potato style potatoes.
Yeah, see, I don't love that as much because it just winds up being bland.
You get a bite of egg, and the next bite you could just get like mostly potato, and yeah, it's bland on bland.
Yeah, so that's why I do prefer the hash brownie kind of stuff because then you get texture and you get that oil and salt from it. It's got some.
See,
more
but you gotta get on. you gotta get a real nice crunchy hash brown in there. You need some texture.
Yeah, no. I've had some bad ones where they basically had the shredded potato part of it down, and then they didn't do the rest of the brown part of the hash brown so well.
They forgot to cook it, so it was kind of raw in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, haven't you ever had that before? Especially when you go to like an IHOP or similar, where
yeah, any sort of like middle of the road style breakfast type restaurant.
Yeah, you get the hash brown, and like maybe there is some sort of coloring on the side that touched the griddle, and then the bottom part is like steamed potato, basically.
Yeah, exactly. You get a little bit of a crust on the top, so you can, you know, you get a half a bite of that, and then it's just pale shredded potato.
Yeah, a little unfortunate, in my personal opinion.
All right, well, so then what's your go-to breakfast burrito aside from hash browns and eggs?
You mean in terms of the meats component?
What do you want in there?
I tend to get bacon in mine. Although there's one place called Serviteca in Culver City that does a shredded chicken, which I think it's a Tinga. Have you read that? It's like a...
Oh, yes, I'm very familiar with Tinga. Please.
So it is that shredded chicken in there and with that sauce. So it's not dry and it's got a lot of flavor. So I like that a lot. And I know it sounds weird to have chicken for breakfast, but it's really good. And I don't love sausage burritos very much. I find that the breakfast sausage seasoning flavors are not really what I'm going after. I'd much rather have the smoky bacon thing going on. But I don't like places that don't cook the bacon enough. And have you ever had a nice wobbly bit of maybe this wasn't cooked enough bacon inside of your breakfast burrito?
It's tantamount to the Chipotle fajita veggies thing when you get a bite of it and you end up pulling the entire long string out of the burrito because it's not cooked properly.
Yeah, that's a no-no for me. And then Jason always gets chorizo burritos, but...
I was just about to ask, like, you probably don't drink enough alcohol to warrant a chorizo burrito in the morning, do you?
Oh, absolutely not. The chorizo burrito is just such a grease and salt bomb that just kills you if you have that first thing in the morning. And Jason and I disagree on that because he feels like you need to have the flavor of the chorizo, and I'm like, no, you're not going to move the rest of the day. You're just going to be dead.
No. And the chorizo burrito exists to bridge the gap between a lot of poor decisions the night before and attempting to make good decisions again in the morning. So it's kind of crossing those two in the single wrapped tortilla.
Yeah. And as far as, my previous comments about, not always cooking the bacon all the way, to a pleasant texture, forget about it for the chorizo. Sometimes you're just going to wind up with what is basically like a reddish sludge all throughout the burrito. So what I like chorizo where you get some of that like crisp, it's cooked in its own fat kind of texture to it. Especially if you get like a red chorizo and potato tacos.
No, but I can imagine what that would be like.
It can be very good, because you're cooking the potatoes basically in that extra grease from the chorizo.
Right. And you know what, let's not dance around it. Like if you're talking about, not entirely properly cooked chorizo, what you're really talking about is you're going to get diarrhea.
Yes.
I mean, you're going to get that 90% of the time with chorizo in general. That's kind of a feature, not a bug. But especially if you get poorly cooked chorizo, you're gonna have a bad day.
Yeah, but even if it's cooked fully and completely, it just the grease of it will. Upset someone's tum tum. That is for sure. Yeah.
It has a little bit of a milk and magnesia effect.
that's not something that I find desirable. If I had to rank them, I would say that I like the chicken burrito, chicken breakfast burrito from Serviteca, probably the most out of the breakfast burritos that are in the immediate area. And then I would say that the runner up would be the breakfast burrito from the Rooster, which started as a food truck and then they got a space. They do a good job. And that's the one that's closest for me to go get to. Also, Serviteca, minor strike against it in that they mainly do Grubhub and DoorDash and Postmates orders. So if you get there and you're a human customer, there might be 10 other human customers and you're all waiting there for probably 40 minutes because they're so backed up with delivery orders on a Sunday morning because everybody else has hangovers. So that's
probably should have just stayed home and ordered with Grubhub.
Yeah.
Yeah, really should have.
But and then tacos por favor.
Well, no, I mean we've okay. So the main thing I wanted to get to is what else? Would you put like a sour cream in your burrito? You need like some cheese in there. How do you address the salsa / hot sauce effect? Like, you can't just have, you know, egg, potato, bacon in it, right? Like you put other stuff in there, don't you?
Yeah. Well, not sour cream. That's not an option anywhere that I've been. And
you've never made a breakfast burrito at home and put some sour cream in? It's real good.
Well, of course I have, because I've done that at home. I'll usually, after I have all of the ingredients for making exactly 1 to 2 burritos the night before, and then realizing I had just enough left over. No, that's not a common occurrence for me to make them at home. But cheese always. If you ask me what kind of cheese, I would shrug because I'm not entirely certain. Probably Monterey Jack is in there, I'm guessing. Not tremendously flavorful, just provides you that unctuous cheese quality to your burrito. Avocado is real good inside of a breakfast burrito. It's a little weird because it's warming from the surrounding ingredients.
Right, and it's definitely, you know, avocado has issues with texture in general, but it does kind of clash with the texture of a burrito in general. You don't really expect that when you're holding a burrito.
But if you're getting a burrito like the one from The Rooster, where they have the really crisp potatoes, then the fatty, mushy quality of the avocado and the coolness of the avocado is actually kind of pleasant in there with the other hot, crispy ingredients.
Okay.
My personal opinion.
I mean, it sounds like a little bit of a, just, you know, a substitute for like some sour cream or something, but I could handle that.
Yeah. And then salsa is a yes, and I don't dunk. I will have the open part of the burrito, and then I'll take the little plastic cup that the salsa is in and kind of drizzle it into the cracks and crevices on the top of the burrito.
Sure,
and then take a bite.
Of course.
Yeah.
So do you have opinions on the type of salsa, though? Because I find that I do not enjoy a chunky salsa in a breakfast burrito.
I don't want pico de gallo.
No. That's a sin right there. Yeah. You can't do that.
But I'm fine with a little texture, as long as it's not a crunchy, chunky texture we're talking about. If we're just talking about like, there's a little like pulp of the vegetables in it, then that's fine. The salsa that they have at the Rooster is a roasted pepper and vegetable salsa. So it's like blackened, basically, and cooked down. And it's still pretty, it's still got a texture to it. It's not textureless, but it's not a runny salsa either. I don't like a very thin, runny salsa.
I'm the exact opposite. I want something that is like basically just like, I like the acidity and the ease of applying of like a hot sauce style.
I want something a little more body than a hot sauce. And I find that the relatively thin, in comparison to the Rooster, the relatively thin salsa that they have at Tacos Por Favor still has enough viscosity that you can pour it into the cracks and crevices and it doesn't immediately drip through the bottom of the burrito. It'll cling to the surface elements.
But again, that's a feature. You want it to drip into the inside of the burrito, so as you go, everything is more evenly sauced.
Yeah, but it drips just enough is what I'm saying.
I don't know. I'm going to just see the viscosity of the salsa with my own eyes before I can make it.
Okay, well, next time you're out here, we'll go with rye to tacos por favor, and we'll have a little taste test. Salsa taste test. I don't think they have the best salsa in the world or anything, but it works for what it does.
That's fine. Mm-hmm. I've heard good things about the burritos. I'm willing to test it out, but I worry that a salsa of a heavier viscosity like that should just be inside the burrito in the first place. It's not really a pourable item at all. Like
no. It clings, but it pours. It clings, but it pours. Dan. You're not hearing me. It clings, but it pours.
You're saying it clings.
It clings, but it pours.
Hang on. Okay, I got it. So it pours, but also...
And then it clings.
And then it clings.
And it clings.
This is a great advertisement. It clings, but it pours.
Sorry. Seinfeld moment. It clings, Jerry.
Don't get me wrong. The pour is the important part.
Yeah.
We also need a little bit of cling.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Because what I don't want is the one that the salsa that is basically just vinegar or mostly water from tomato water, where that just will run straight through a burrito. I don't want it to just filter straight through the bottom of it like it's a Brita filter. I want there to be some substance to the sauce so it sticks to the upper level where I've poured it.
That's fair. But I think my issue primarily is that most of the salsas that have both the cling and the pour, they don't have enough of the flavor or the bite that I'm looking for. Because when I'm adding an accessory like a salsa or a hot sauce, I'm really looking for some acid or some heat or something there. And most of those breakfast burrito salsas, it's just like, here's some ground up tomato to put on top of your egg burrito. And I don't want that. That's not what I want here.
Well, that's not what you got here. At Tacos Por Favor, for example, for their clingable, pourable situation, there's a red salsa and a green salsa, of course, salsa roja and salsa verde. And you can pour either of those, and they have relatively the same viscosity, but they have different characteristics, of course, because your green one is going to have green chilies and tomatillos, and your red one is going to have more of those fruitier, peppery, hotter flavors to it from a mature pepper. And so it just depends. And what I do is I'll get both of them and then I'll alternate. But Jason only likes the red one. He does not like green salsas at all, which is a problem for me because my favorite kind of enchilada is enchiladas de Suiza, which is completely, I know, white person food thing, but I love them. I love the acidity and the cheese. It's great.
Amanda's go-to food is enchiladas, and she is probably the whitest human being I know. So, yeah, I'm with you there. I get it. But I think Jason's appreciation with green salsas will come with age, because I was always a peppery red salsa guy. But as I grew and as I aged, I discovered that there was a lot of good flavor in the green salsa category there. Tomatillos are great, especially you get that nice little bit of lime in a lot of them. It's very tasty. And you can get a lot of heat out of some of those green chilies if done correctly, like Los Taquitos over there on Elliott Road that was very small when Guy Fieri went there, but it now has grown much larger. Their green salsa is both very hot and very flavorful and delicious, and I love it very much.
See, the thing I find intimidating is if I go to a place that I haven't been to before, I have to pause and ask myself, is this a spicy salsa verde, or is this a mild salsa verde? And is this a spicy salsa roja, or is this a mild salsa roja? Because have you ever gone to those places where you would expect the salsa roja to be the spicier one and the salsa verde to be the tangier one, and then you get the opposite expectation?
Yes, that is this place in particular, because you get the pepperiness in the red one, but it's not very hot. And I was like, well, that's not too bad, because the first time you go to a place, you get both. You alternate. You try them out. You see what you do there. And I took a big bite of the green because I was just expecting some nice tomatillo and some lime. And it was like, oh, this green came to play. Like, it's really showing up and doing its job. And I'm a big fan. So I went and got, you know, three more of the little plastic cups of the green and just covered all of the rice and beans in the burrito with it, and it was very good.
Yeah, and orange is always a no for me.
You know, they also have, you have to order it specially, and it costs like an extra dollar, but they have a habanero salsa, and it just, it doesn't have the flavor. I don't think it's even as hot as the green. It's not good.
Everywhere I've gone, it has the flavor, and it has the piquancy. It is overwhelming for my fragile body. So I don't love it.
Well, as you know, I am a pan man when it comes to the heat. So give me all you got when it comes to the heat.
Yeah, heat with extra heat.
Yeah. I had some spicy gumbo at the casino where I was working.
Oh, but that sounds like a risky proposition. It sounds like a real Fight Club mushroom soup situation.
No, it's honestly some of the best gumbo in Phoenix, which doesn't say much for the gumbo or Phoenix. You know, this is a place where you order a 10 out of 10, they're going to give it to you and you're going to pay for it. But they also have a little like a salt shaker with their proprietary house blend of spices, which is basically like ghost peppers and cayenne and stuff. So I got a 4 and then I sprinkled some of that stuff and it was like, man, I really should have gone for like a 6 or something. But they had some good heat there. So it warms you from the inside out. I enjoyed that very much. Mm. I enjoy a Southern style heat. That's something I'm coming to appreciate with age as well.
I appreciate a heat that builds. I find a lot of times, especially with the, like, when you said I should go to Guisado's, and you almost killed me, that I don't appreciate the immediate affront of heat, right. Nor do I appreciate the sneaky heat.
I mean, to be fair, there is no more immediate or violent a heat than the Guisado's taco that you consume.
Yeah, that was pure pain. But I appreciate a heat that builds as opposed to a sneaky heat or an immediate assault. Either of those things are not my favorite. Because like the sneaky heat doesn't do me any good because then I'll eat a whole bunch of it and then I'll just be like, uh-oh, that was wrong. And then the immediate attack is like, well, I took a bite and I can't enjoy the rest of this. So that's a bummer. And that would put the Guisado's Toriado's taco in that category. Then you got your heat that builds like we were describing there, where you've got some accumulation of heat as you progress through your dish. And then
Time you finish your meal that your whole body is glistening with sweat and you just have a little bit of a glow going on.
Well, I'll dial it back from that one.
Do you not glisten?
No, I don't. I mean, I'm sure I do, but I don't. It's not a desirable outcome of eating anything.
Hmm. Hmm.
Yeah. Like, I couldn't live in a hot climate where people have hot soup, which is a very common thing, because I would be uncomfortable.
I do that. It's good.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Hot and sour soup. Love it so much.
Hot and sour soup is disgusting.
It's so delicious.
I don't like the texture.
What texture? It's soup.
But it's got like...
With the tofu?
Yeah, it's got like a... in the egg thing, too. It's not as weird as egg drop soup, which I also don't like.
Yeah, there shouldn't be large egg drop style stringy bits in your...
No, but there's like viscosity.
There is an inherent... egginess to the viscosity of the broth. That's good. If it's got the right flavor, that can be great because the delicious flavor lingers with the viscosity.
I prefer your brothier soups that are mainly relying on your roasted vegetables and or animal bones and stuff. Mm. Your collagens and whatnot.
I'm just picturing you making like the whitest soup, just like boil a zucchini and be like, ah, look at this delicious soup.
Oh, well, that would be silly. What I do make is a white bean soup. So it's very similar, but it's not zucchini.
do you at least, I don't know, like blend it at all or whatever so it gets thicker?
Well, see, here's the thing. My family... my grandfather would make the soup called Minest, which is not something you're going to have a successful time Googling, so don't bother. It seems to be barely documented, but Minest, not minestrone, is basically a soup that uses escarole, which is a bitter lettuce green kind of a thing, and cannellini beans. And usually some part of a, like, pig, like leftover ham, leftover, you know, whatever. And you basically boil the crap out of your pig part, and then you put in your cannellini beans and your escarole, and maybe top it off with some chicken broth or whatever, and you cook that until it's all simmering away, and then you serve it. Part is that it would always be better the day after because the white beans would break down, the starches in the beans would break down overnight into the soup.
Mm-hmm.
And I also never really liked Escarole because it's a sort of an unpleasant green, in my opinion. And it also texturally turns to kind of, well, just imagine boiling lettuce. It has,
yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. It's just weirdly wilted and stringy. I don't like the texture of it. and so what I do is I make a white bean soup that has, chicken broth. And usually I'll start with pancetta or with, some prosciutto bits if I got it. And instead of like a whole like ham hock or whatever, and then, put in the cannellini beans and put in, kale, Tuscan kale, the dino kale, the flat one. And you cook that and it doesn't break down as much as the escarole and it's not as bitter. And the white beans, I will take a little, potato masher or two and break up a couple of them. You know, like maybe a quarter of them. And so that'll cook into the soup. And then you get the sort of the same effect of the starches having released overnight.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see it. Yeah.
And throw in a Parmesan rind if you got it.
Oh, sure. Why not?
The umami.
No, you just reminded me that I grew up on a similar boring soup in that...
It's not boring.
Well, my family, God bless them, used to make one of the most bland Italian wedding soups you've ever had, which is, you know, it's like water, celery, some spinach, and these very tiny undercooked meatballs or whatever. But yeah, it just tastes like nothing.
I've never had Italian wedding soup.
Oh, it's meatball and spinach flavored water, and then there's some celery in it.
Yeah, the Limp Bizkit's follow up album. No, but I just my family didn't make it. They're Italian, but I guess of a different region or something, because it just never happened. And then
it's not a good soup. There are no instances in where it's a good soup.
But I was always curious about it because you pass the soup aisle and there's Progresso soup and they'll have an Italian wedding soup there. And I just see that. And my mom trained me, of course, to not just buy mystery meatballs from a can. So I've never purchased that one, but, it was just always curious about it.
I mean, honestly, the 1,000 milligrams of sodium or whatever in that can of soup probably adds more flavor than any of the soups that we ever made.
Oh, that's probably true. But yeah. It's a, I like a boring soup. Give me a boring soup. You ever had a tortellini in brodo?
No.
That's you get the tiny tortellini, the itty bitty ones.
Tortellini doesn't belong in a soup in my mind.
Well, you're kind of just putting them down in a layer in a bowl, not like a cereal bowl.
Is this like French onion soup but with tortellinis in it?
No. You basically are taking like a shallow wide bowl and you put the tortellini in it.
Okay.
That you've also put in, you've cooked it in some broth, like a very thick broth or stock. And then you have that like basically as a layer there. So you have your single layer. What I mean by that is there's not like, if you stuck a spoon in, you would get a tortellini or you would get a tortellini with the tortellini next to it. You wouldn't get five tortellinis from going down like a bowl of cereal, you know?
Yeah, I get you.
Okay. So anyway, it's very pleasant. I like it. Because you get cheese and you get that the chickeny brothy flavor. Or I guess you could do it with mushroom stock and then you'd have a vegetarian one.
I think the overarching theme here is that you really just want to make sure that you're not assaulted by your food.
I mean, no. I like some stuff in it that's exciting. I had ramen the other day, and it had a little of the I forget the name of the powder. The not Togarashi. Maybe it was Togarashi. Anyway, there's the
black seaweedy one.
No. It was the one that's chili pepper ground up with sesame seeds. Usually comes in a very skinny bottle. And you shake it on top of it.
Yeah, but I thought it was the black with the sesame seeds.
Well, that's, I think, either Furukake or Togarashi. I can't remember. But anyway, you went the little pepper guy with the sesame seeds, and I had that on my ramen. So it disproves your point, sir. I like a little zip, a little zing.
Did you microwave some top ramen?
No. I went to the food court at Mitsuha, and had the one from Santoku. Or
you just made all those words up, didn't you?
No. The Mitsuha is a Japanese grocery store chain.
You love eating in grocery stores, don't you?
I find grocery stores weirdly comforting, to be perfectly honest with you.
I wonder why that is.
I worked in a grocery store at one point.
I know. Don't get me wrong, I enjoy a grocery store, but I have never had the desire to consume food within the grocery store.
I don't understand why. I mean, I know you have a terrible Safeway. I wouldn't probably want to eat there. But
I feel like in my brain, I need some separation from the purchasing of the goods to the consuming of the goods. Now, don't get me wrong. I have been to mostly Food City grocery stores, which are the Hispanic ones out in like Chandler and downtown, where they have like a separate like buffet style restaurant kind of attached to the grocery store where it's like a food court thing, and I am not above getting some tacos or burritos there, but that's not I don't go there with that intention. If I'm there, it's like, you know what, I'm not gonna eat for another 5 hours, this seems fine, I'll do it. But I don't that's probably happened 3 times in my life. Like I don't want to buy a deli sandwich from a grocery store and eat it there.
Okay.
Well, which is super hypocritical, because like you make the grocery store really small, like a little Italian deli style thing that sells cans and pasta and stuff, and then I'm all over eating a sandwich there. But if it's a big grocery store, I just don't want to eat. I don't want to eat food there.
That's very strange, Dan. It's where your food comes from.
You know, it may have taken us 264 episodes, but I think we finally revealed the fact that I'm a bit odd, especially when it comes to food.
Well, I think we've proven also similarly that I have picky things too. Sometimes.
Mr. I don't like Tootsie Pops. What part of Beverly Hills do you go to get your artisanal Tootsie Pops made?
I just generally don't like lollipops.
Why?
Is it
because they get sharp?
No, they're just sugar. Like, I just don't want a bland sugar delivery
sugar?
Mechanism.
It's not bland. It's flavorful. And there's sugar. It's sugar flavor and it's flavor.
So artificial tasting. But
that's the point.
But I don't want it. You can't make me have it. Also, I don't like Tootsie Roll Pops Tootsie Pops because, you know, you lick your way to the center of the Tootsie Pop, as the owl says, and mm-hmm. you get there. And you've got little candy shards surrounding your Tootsie chocolatey taffy thing in the middle. And you're like, well, I got to eat this thing. And I can't just keep licking it because now I'm just going to get cocoa sludge all over my mouth. But if I just bite into it, I'm going to get all the shards. And then
you mash it together.
But
it's juxtaposition. You got texture and flavor.
That's fine for the owl, but I don't want to do that.
So, would you say you were more of a Blow Pop kid than a Tootsie Pop kid?
No, because this would get sticky.
My God. you don't want to be sticky, right?
No, I hate stickiness. So, no pops of any kind. Although, I do like popsicles.
No pops, chair.
No pop cherry. But you are a
gum person, though, if I recall. You're not a mint person, you're a gum person.
I'm a gum person. I have no objection to chewing things, and I love taffy. who doesn't love a good saltwater taffy?
What flavor?
Many of them. Even the bit weird banana one.
So do you like the little you're talking about the canonical like little round ones that are wrapped in like wax paper, right?
Yeah, saltwater taffy.
You're not talking about like a big stick, like a Laffy Taffy kind
No. And I'm not talking about Now and Laters either. Although I did like Now and Laters when I was a kid.
Oh God, I swear to God, I thought they were gonna literally pull my teeth and or fillings out.
Yeah, see, that's why I don't like them so much anymore. But when you're a kid, it's interesting.
Like, this is hilarious. Maybe I'll pull all my baby teeth out by eating these three Now and Laters.
Ugh, they were, what an interesting cement-like texture that those had.
Picture this. We're going to make Starburst with a third of the flavor and mix in a little bit of concrete. It'll be great. Kids will love it.
Yeah. I do like Starburst as well.
Yeah, I had some Starburst. They have a... We had a lot of leftover Halloween candy. I ate a bunch of it. They have ones that are two flavors now on a single square. So I ate a bunch that were... It was like blue raspberry and lemonade or something swirled in the thing. They're called duos because it's very clever.
I think I've seen some of those, but they were tandem. They were side by side, not swirled.
Well, it's both. Like, you get two. So one of them was like a green and purple, and one of them was blue and yellow.
No, but what I'm saying is the actual Starburst block unit was you basically like had a split down the like a line through it, and one half mm-hmm. was one flavor and one half was the other flavor. But you were describing yeah, something that maybe. was
it could be both. Could be both. You could unwrap the paper and you can find out it's both in there.
But wait, what?
They could be doing a left Twix and a right Twix thing to you. Looks like there's two, but it's really just one.
But Dan, I'm talking about the block.
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay. I just want to clarify because like I've had the ones where it's two things in the one thing.
I understand what you're saying,
but you're making me sound like of somebody who doesn't understand what a Starburst is, and it's irritating me. But,
it's up for the audience to decide which one of us is correct. And they want to side with. I'm just giving them both sides of the point here.
oh man.
Boy,
it's got both sides of them. So
candy.
Yuck.
Did you hand out candy on Halloween?
No, there was that one day where I was pretty depressed, and I had a Milky Way, fun size Milky Way, from the candy bucket at work. And
I like that your signal of depression is like, oh, I was having such a bad day. I ate a Milky Way.
Well,
can you imagine how depressed I would have to have a Milky Way, fun size, no less?
Well, I just don't like candy in general. I don't have a sweet tooth, like, at all, basically.
No, really? Nothing?
No, well, no, I mean, no, no, no. But put me in front of starches of any other kind, of a savory variety.
You guys have desserts at every one of the 11-course meals that you go to, and a lot of those look like they have sweet components.
Oh, well, yes, obviously. Somebody else has a sweet tooth.
If it's a processed sweet, oh, okay. So you're saying you don't indulge. You're just there for the Instagram likes.
No, no. I have to have some of it too. See, what happens is at the end of a meal, I say I'm full, and then Jason says we're going to get a dessert and we're going to split it. And I say, but I'm full. And then he says, you're going to have a bite. And I said, but I'm full. And then we'll pick a dessert, and that involves whatever one is chocolate. And then we get that dessert. Oh, and sometimes if I actually want to have dessert, and I'll be like, oh, it'd be nice if we had this apple pie a la mode thing over here, this tart, or this creme brulee. And then he said, no, but there's no chocolate. So I get overridden. And then we get the chocolate
one. Really? So he's that dedicated to the chocolate.
Yes, very dedicated to the chocolate. And then we get the chocolate thing. And then I take a bite of it, and then put the spoon down, and then he eats the rest of the dessert thing.
Hmm.
But see,
I had no idea he was I have to have
some of it, because then he's not having a dessert by himself. I am participating.
You gotta be a team player. But yeah. don't get me wrong, I am team apple things left and right, and I get shot down all the time because, you know, most of the apple desserts are too dry or whatever. But I am a fan of the apple-y things in particular. That's where I gravitate on a dessert menu, but I don't typically have a strong enough opinion to overrule other people.
Oh yeah. And my favorite thing about fall is it's basically like pie season right now. You get your pumpkin. A lot of places will be having their pumpkin things on the menu, and you've got your apple. Love apple with a lot of the cinnamon warming spices. It's real good. It's real good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What a time to be alive and eating pie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, speaking of the season or whatever, after stopping by the Apple store to make an exchange and a return, we swung into the old Pottery Barn there, and they got all of the fall smelling candles right out there on the front. And I just smelled all of them, and they were just wonderful.
I don't like food candles.
Oh, no, no, no. These are all like your, you've got, I don't know, your various cinnamons, and they all have stupid names. I don't know what the hell they're called, but you know, there's cidery smelling things, and there's pine smelling things, and it's just the fall candles are there, and they're good.
Yeah, well, it's almost Fraser Fir candle season.
It's very exciting.
Did you burn all your ones up? I have one here that's about quarter full, so I might need to buy another.
That's a good question. I would have to slide my chair back further than these headphones would allow for me to see if there is still enough in the fridge. For I got a couple other candles from... Where the hell did I get that? Like Bath and Body Works or whatever. I got a candle from them because they have a we get their smelly foamy soaps because we enjoy them. Mm. And I had a candle that smells like one of the foamy soaps that I liked, and I've been enjoying that candle lately.
Yuck! I hate Bath and Body.
They 60% of the foamy soaps that they make with the smells are horrible, and the other ones are very good.
It's so overwhelming, even walking past a Bath & Body at a mall. You're mm-hmm. not even inside of the place, and you're just, like, assaulted. It's too much. It's too much.
Yeah, but it's good. The soaps are good. I get, there's one called Flannel, which is, it's basically just, like, cedar and mahogany smell, and I enjoy it very much. And that's what my candle is as well.
Mm. I do occasionally like a little... cedar sandalwood thing going on.
I think I have a deep internal, like, there's probably something from my childhood where I had a very intimate experience with some cedar or something, because I love the smell of cedar. Actually, you know what, I do know what it was. When I was I wish I could remember the name. I feel like we've talked about this before. There was an author who made like scary monster books, not Goosebumps. It was like the generation right after Goosebumps, when you're a little bit older. I can't for the life of me remember what his name was, but I had a bookmark that was cedar that came from some like hotel or something somewhere. It was like a gift that we bought when we were on a vacation. And I remember reading those books with my little cedar bookmark, and I would smell it every now and again while I was reading and turning pages. And I loved that damn thing.
Hmm.
What was the name of that writer? Baseball Robot Eyes Book.
What a premise.
The Eyes of the Killer Robot. John Bellairs. Bellairs? B-E-L-L-A-I-R-S.
Okay.
I think he was also the guy who wrote The House with the Clock in Its Walls, that they made this stupid movie out of.
Okay. It's not ringing.
Can you read any of these?
It's not ringing a Bellair for me.
That's great. Mm-hmm. Great work right there.
Well, I tried.
It's terrible. Mm-hmm. I don't recognize any of these. Yeah, House of the Clock in the Walls. That might have been the one I was reading with the cedar bookmark. It was pretty good. Curse of the Blue Figurine. Yeah, I remember that one.
Dan?
Yeah, yeah.
Not to halt your walk down memory lane, but maybe we can let us all out of the car first before you continue.
No. All right, fine. Oh, we can button this up, I suppose.
Yeah. And we'll put the cedar bookmark in the book and close this chapter on our clingy salsas and God, whatever the heck else we talked about. Pants.
They call them trousers. It's terrible. It's terrible. Worst episode we've ever done.
Put an end mark in there. Well, the thing that really got me is, like, we were talking about food, but then I forgot how you pivoted to talking about sleep. And then I was like, wait a minute. Did I black out for a second? Like, how did we go from my question about what you ate to how much sleep you had?
Oh, I don't know. We talked about sleep for more than, like, 5 seconds.
No, but see, that's what I'm saying is, like, I just had no. All of a sudden, I was just like, "Wait a minute! I don't even remember how this topic changed."
You asked if I had anything to eat or whatever, and I said, "I don't know. I slept in and didn't really do anything." Anyway,
and then you started talking about like your sleep schedule for the week and stuff, and I was like, "But you didn't answer my question."
I don't want to answer your question.
Just tell me what you ate, Dan.
Are you a cop? I don't have to tell you nothing.
You have to tell me if you're a cop. No, but. That was fun.